Hello and welcome back to the Texans Talk podcast. As usual, I'm your host, Anthony Wood, and today we have a double bill for you to help you through these somewhat turbulent and tumultuous times of quarantine on Bill O'Brien. My first guest of the day is Texans insider and friend of the show, Jake Asman. Jake, thanks very much for joining us. How are you doing?
Anthony, I'm doing well. I always appreciate you having me on the podcast and hope you and your listeners are safe.
Absolutely. The first things first, I hope everyone out there is safe. I hope everyone's healthy, and I hope you're not going too mad in the quarantine times of today, let's be honest. But starting off, obviously, there's been a lot of moves the last few weeks. Some good, some not so good, depending on how you look at it. Let's just put it that way. So let's start off with some of the bigger deals. We'll avoid Hopkins until later on. Let's start off with the Randall Cobb signing. How do you feel about that? Do you feel they underpaid, overpaid, so on and so forth?
Yeah, I was a little surprised that you know, they brought in Randall Cobb and that was going to be, you know, one of the big free agent splashes they made. I mean, he's not going to be a true replacement to DeAndre Hopkins, but, you know, he's a good player, and I think he could still contribute. Now, given the guy a three-year deal, and he only had, you know, 55 catches last year for the Cowboys, I mean, he had a good year, but it's just, to me, it just speaks to the fact that the Texans really can't rely on any of the other slot receivers than they have currently on the roster. I mean, Kiki Kiuchi is supposed to be that guy, but when you're investing that type of money in Randall Cobb, I think that basically Bill O'Brien said, look, I can't rely on what we currently have. I'll overpay for a guy that I at least know is a dependable receiver. And that's a buzzword that O'Brien loves to use with the media. Smart, dependable, all that. AKA DeAndre Hopkins, but we'll get to that. But Randall Cobb's a good player. Did they overpay? I think that's obvious they did, but, you know, the Texans are in a win-now mode, and Bill O'Brien's not really thinking about the future, so he's willing to give the guy $27 million over 3 years.
But I'm glad you mentioned Kiki Kiuchi, because that's something that's really bothered me this last year. He looked so good his rookie year. Yes, he had a lot of injury issues, don't get me wrong, but he looked so good in his rookie year, and then second year, he just disappeared. He was playing DeAndre Carter ahead of him most of the time. I mean, how do you feel about his situation? Is it just a case of he's not healthy enough? Is it a case of he's not fitting in the scheme? Or is it just that him and O'Brien have sort of gone head to head?
Yeah, I mean, it could be a couple of different factors. I mean, the biggest thing for me is QT hasn't been able to stay healthy. And when you can't be on the field, it's tough to gain trust of the coaching staff, right? So QT's got to stay healthy. But I agree with you, Anthony. I looked at Kiki QT this past season, and I thought, you know, he was due for a breakout year. Go back to that playoff game two seasons ago against the Indianapolis Colts. What do you have, like 12 or 13 catches in that game? I mean, he was a beast. He played great, and you thought, all right, well, you know, his rookie year was marred by all those hamstring issues, but he'd come back in year two, maybe he could make a big jump, and it just never happened. So, you know, he's kind of in that O'Brien doghouse right now. Once you get in the O'Brien doghouse, it's very tough to get out. So, you know, QT's going to be given an opportunity, I'm sure, to compete, but, the writing's on the wall. When you invest $27 million, including $19 million guaranteed for another slot receiver in Randall Cobb, you're basically saying, well, we don't trust a Kiki QT and we need to move on. So I think the writing's on the wall that QT's days at the Texans could be numbered.
Absolutely. And I think it's a real shame. I must admit, I was very excited to see what would happen with him. But moving on, I mean, I think Cobb will pay off in the long run. I think, yes, they did overpay, as you said. It's pretty obvious that they did. But he's a good, dependable player. It's just a case of will he stay healthy? Fingers crossed he will. Obviously, moving on, looking elsewhere at receiver, there's a big hole to fill there. They were struggling for depth anyway, obviously, with Stills was pretty reliable last year, but Fuller, again, injury issues, of course, hampering his year, and then throwing QT, we mentioned, as well. Should the Texans, in your opinion, have looked elsewhere at receiver, say, someone like Robbie Anderson?
I thought Robbie Anderson could have made some sense, just because you look at his game, it's similar to Will Fuller. I think Will Fuller is a better, you know, all-around wide receiver, but Robbie Anderson plays. And Will Fuller can't stay on the field. I don't need to tell anyone listening to this that's a Texans fan about the issues with Will Fuller. When Fuller's out there, he's an outstanding player. I mean, there's a reason why we always give the stats. If you watch any of the broadcasts the Texans are on, they always give the stats. Oh, when Fuller's out there compared to when he's not out there, and the offense significantly more efficient with Will Fuller out there on the field, but he can't stay on the field, and that's a big risk that the Texans are now going to be relying on, because you traded away, you know, DeAndre Hopkins, who never misses games. So I thought they should have been more aggressive in free agency addressing the wide receiver spot. You know, Breshad Perriman only signed a one-year deal with the Jets. He's a speed guy, similar type player to Robbie Anderson and Will Fuller. I thought that could have made some sense. And even Robbie Anderson's deal with Carolina was a 2-year commitment. It didn't exactly, you know, blow the waters, you know, and cause havoc in free agency. I thought it was a fair deal that, you know, a bunch of teams should have been in on him. So, yeah, I think they could have been more aggressive addressing that position, but they liked Randall Cobb, and now we'll see what they do in the draft. They obviously have the two second-round picks, I should say, and I think we'd all be shocked, given the depth of wide receiver in this draft class, if the Texans aren't aggressive and use one of those second-rounders on a you know, essential replacement for DeAndre Hopkins.
Absolutely, and you got to feel for guys like Randall Cobb in this situation. I mean, the pressure's really going to be on them going into this year. There's going to be a lot of eyes staring on them because of the hole he's got to fill. Obviously, same goes for David Johnson. I mean, how did you feel about him being part of the trade, and do you feel he's going to be a fit for this offense?
Yeah, I'm curious to see what he has left. I mean, you know, I was as shocked as anyone with this trade. I mean, David Johnson, his issue is staying on the field. He has not been able to be healthy the last few years, and I don't think at age 28 now he's going to magically, you know, become a better player. You know, I thought the trade didn't make any sense. You know, if you're going to trade DeAndre Hopkins, that's one thing, but, you know, you can't be telling me that David Johnson makes you that much better as a football team. It just doesn't. You know, the second round pick's nice, but you could have got way more for Hopkins. David Johnson, when he's right, can be an effective player, but go back and look at the year he had. I mean, he was not on the field at all last year at times. He got benched by a couple other running backs in front of him. There was a guy at a Fordham that was a fourth-round pick that was taking the bulk of the snaps over David Johnson for the Cardinals last year. So I don't like the deal. You know, it's not to knock David Johnson. I mean, he's kind of put in this spot where, you know, people are going to be booing him and not really giving him a chance. You know, before the season even begins, Texans fans already want him gone. But he's paid a lot of money, and he hasn't been able to stay on the field. And then when you see some of the other running backs that were available in free agency, if you're the Texans, I how do you not wait it out and see, you know, what happens with a guy like Todd Gurley? Devontae Freeman was out there. You know, Melvin Gordon was out there. Any one of those backs I'd rather have, and they're not going to cost you the money that David Johnson is going to cost you. Not to mention, you traded the best receiver in the sport in DeAndre Hopkins. So, you know, David Johnson, if he's healthy, can he be an efficient third down back? Sure, but I'm sorry. I don't know what you can really expect from a guy that, you know, has been on the decline each of the last 3 years.
Something that really bothers me about this trade as well is obviously, and again, we'll get into this shortly, money came into it big time for O'Brien, as it always does. It was all about him wanting, DeAndre Hopkins wanting a new deal. But what really bothers me about this is that the Texans now have two of the, I think, top five or top six paid running backs in the NFL in Duke Johnson and David Johnson. I don't see how O'Brien can justify not paying players like Hopkins, but go ahead and justify having two of the most expensive backs in the sport, neither of whom have really been spectacular the last few years.
No question. I mean, this is why you don't have your head coach be a general manager. You got to have checks and balances. And when O'Brien talks about, oh, well, you know, DeAndre Hopkins has 3 years left on his deal, we didn't want to pay him, you work it out. You keep your best players. You know, you don't trade away DeAndre Hopkins to get a, you know, an older running back with a lot of money left on his deal and David Johnson. That's just not good enough. Texans fans deserve better than the value they've received in these trades. I mean, Jadeveon Clowney got them nothing. You know, you traded away Jadeveon Clowney and DeAndre Hopkins and got absolutely nothing of significance in return in either of those deals combined. Then you trade away a ton of assets to get Laremy Tunsil, but you don't give Laremy Tunsil a contract to make that deal happen at the time. So now Laremy Tunsil has all this leverage on you. You got to pay him whatever he wants because you can't lose him. You invested too much in making that trade to get him. So just the asset management by O'Brien has been the biggest issue since he's been, you know, the official GM. You know, not understanding value of trades or value of draft picks. Trading away a third-round draft pick, as you brought up, Anthony, for Duke Johnson never made any sense. People around the NFL, I had one NFL insider tell me that it's laughable that Duke Johnson went for a third-round pick. And Texans fans saw he's a nice player, but he wasn't leading the way on offense. Last year, you know, the guy that was, you know, dominating for the Texans as far as getting the bulk of the touches was Carlos Hyde. He had a good year and ran for over $1,000. So I just think, you know, you look at what's happened this offseason, the Texans have not improved. You know, they've stayed around the same, and you could argue they've actually gotten worse. They need to nail their draft to make sure they take a step forward in 2020. But, you know, a lot of times you make a, you know, smart draft picks doesn't necessarily pay off in year one. So I just think you look at what's happened this offseason, and you cannot trust the head coach also being the GM. It doesn't work, and it's cost the Texans, you know, some of the best players they've ever had in franchise history, whether it be Jadeveon Clowney and then obviously DeAndre Hopkins.
And I'm really glad you brought up Jadeveon Clowney and Laremy Tunsil. I mean, I'm really hoping that Clowney ends up at the Titans, I must admit. I think that'd be absolutely hilarious to see him end up with Vrabel in Tennessee. I mean, I think that'd be fantastic to watch twice a year. And then going on to Tunsil, I mean, I think we can all agree he has handled his situation brilliantly the last week or so. Talking to the media, he's been very complimentary of O'Brien, very complimentary of trusting the process and so on and so forth. And he's really helped himself out because now the Texans are going to be under even more pressure, as you mentioned, to sign him to that big deal. And I think he's played the situation fantastically.
No doubt about it. I mean, he has leverage. You know, this guy wants to be the highest paid offensive lineman in football. Well, guess what? Next guy up, he's going to get the opportunity to do just that. And that's kind of how it goes. Which is why when the Texans were making this deal, they should have made Tunsil agree to a new contract extension. That's another issue when you have a head coach who's also the GM that doesn't understand value. Bill O'Brien wasn't concerned about, you know, the 2020 offseason when he made this trade in August. He was concerned about winning because he knew his job could be on the line if the Texans failed. He knew that, you know, Matt Khalil couldn't be the starting tackle on opening day. He just knew that couldn't be the case. So the concern wasn't, oh, about managing the future and dealing with the salary cap. It was, let's just make this move and worry about it later. Well, worrying about it later means that you don't have DeAndre Hopkins on your team now, that your depth is going to be significantly tested when you have to pay, you know, Laremy Tunsil whatever he wants, and you have to eventually pay Deshaun Watson, you know, a record-setting contract because you got to keep him. But then you affect the rest of your football team salary cap-wise with all these moves. So they're all interconnected. You know, we don't think about it in the, you know, in the long term a lot of times as fans, but as a GM, your job is to be balancing the short term and the long term. And when your head coach is the GM, it's proven time and time again, unless your name is Bill Belichick, and even he has a bunch of guys in that front office that, you know, help him with the salary cap. You can't do both. And that's really where all this comes to with the Texans. It comes down to the fact that the head coach is not a terrible head coach. I think he's a fine head coach, probably an average head coach. The problem is when you give him the GM responsibilities on top of that, it significantly hamstrings your franchise moving forward.
Absolutely. And speaking of both the long and short term, I mean, one of the positions the Texans knew they were most likely going to have to address this offseason was defensive tackle. DJ Reader was coming up to the end of his contract. Houston knew they were going to have to pay him, and that was going to be tricky. Obviously, we know now he went to the Bengals. Great move for him. He fully deserves it. He's been fantastic the last couple of years. I think, if I'm not mistaken, O'Brien says something along the lines of, there are certain guys we just couldn't do it financially. We would have loved to have kept DJ Reader. We had good conversations with him and his representatives. We couldn't get that one done. Now, that wasn't overly unexpected, given that we know obviously Laremy Tunsil's going to need a new deal and Deshaun Watson as well, at the very least. I mean, how did you feel about the Texans not re-signing him? And then how do you feel about Houston bringing in Tim Jernigan?
No question. I mean, DJ Reader is, you know, speaking from, you know, someone that's gotten the chance to interview him and be in the locker room with him covering the team, he's a great guy, beloved in that locker room, and he's going to be missed, but you can't keep everyone. And the Bengals paid him a ton of money to go over there, so I don't think it's surprising that the Texans weren't able to keep him. But you look at this defense right now, you know, in the secondary, I think you have a lot of promise with Justin Reed, and Tayshawn Gibson is a nice player as far as the two safety spots go. But Gary and Connolly is a huge question mark. Lonnie Johnson in his second year, he needs to step up and take another big step forward. You know, bringing back Bradley Roby was smart, but Roby's a, you know, probably, you know, a slightly above average corner, I guess you could say. He's not a true game changing player. You look at this defensive line right now. J.J. Watt gets hurt. Who's rushing the quarterback? You know,
Absolutely.
Wade Merciless is a great guy, but, you know, we saw his production significantly drop once J.J. Watt got hurt, I think, in that Week 8 game against the Raiders. And they paid Whitney a ton of money to come back. And he's, listen, great locker room guy, Texan for life in his career. I understand all that. But, you know, you're going to need a big year from Whitney Merciless. You know, Charles Omenihu, you know, you invested a draft pick in this guy. Can he, you know, take another step forward and get to the quarterback? There are a lot of question marks with that defense. I don't think firing Romeo Crennel is, like, going to save this 3-4 defense next year. I think there's a lot of question marks that are going to, you know, be following this Texans defense all throughout the offseason into training camp, assuming that opens up on time given the climate of the country right now. But, you know, offensively, you took a step back when you trade DeAndre Hopkins, and defensively, you know, there's a lot of question marks right now with this team. They're talented. You know, they did win 10 games last year, but, you know, I think there's a lot of uncertainty surrounding this Texans team.
Absolutely, and that's the thing. At the end of the day, we don't know who the answers are up front. I mean, like I said, Tim Jernigan, he's on a 1-year deal. We don't really know what to expect from him. He's had so many injury issues the last few years. Don't get me wrong, when he's healthy, he's a very talented player and he can make a big difference. But that's a big question mark, and that's why they only went for the 1 year deal. Brandon Dunn, I mean, he's a decent backup, but he's certainly not at the DJ Reader sort of level to start up front. You mentioned Charles Omenihu. I think he's going to have a good year. I like what I've seen from Jacob Martin as well, but again, they just lack depth there. So it's disappointing to see they haven't made some bigger moves this offseason, but I guess it's O'Brien, isn't it? I guess if there wasn't any wheeling and dealing to be done, he wasn't going to get involved in that. So slightly disappointing, but. On the plus side, like you said, they did bring back Bradley Roby. I do think that's a good deal. I completely agree. They brought back Vernon Hargreaves and Phillip Gaines as well, which I'm not 100% sure about. How do you feel about those moves?
I think it's just what O'Brien looks at and goes, ah, he knows the system. We invested draft picks in bringing these guys in. We'll bring them back. I think that's part of it. I mean, you've seen the Texans try to, find the answer at cornerback by just picking up guys from other teams. Investing draft picks in a guy like Arianne Conley and, going on the waiver claims with Vernon Hargreaves. They're trying to address that position, but corners are very tough to find. So that's why they're kind of just like, we'll take a chance on this person and this person and hope, we find something. But, I mean, the reality is this defense is predicated on getting to the quarterback. If they get a good pass rush up front, it makes your secondary that much better. I mean, that's common, just football vernacular. But the problem is, the guys you're relying on to get to the quarterback are injury prone. So that's a big concern. And this secondary at times has been exposed. We've seen it, right? It's the secondary last year was not nearly as bad as it was during the 2018 season. But I still think there's some big question marks there. And I think corner is a huge need for the Texans in this draft. And I would be surprised if they don't end up taking at least one DB within, with one of their early picks that they have. I know they have, two second rounders. They have a third round pick they could use. So, maybe, that's how they try and address the corner. And you obviously need guys already on this roster to take a big step forward. And that's a guy like Lonnie Johnson, who last year they did use that second round pick on. So, I mean, that's kind of what you're looking at if you're the Texans. You need the guys you do have on your team to take a big step forward, and the guys that you obviously are banking on, that you brought back maybe another year in the system, even though maybe the system's a little different with a new DC, but just familiarity playing in Houston, maybe that helps some of these guys take another step forward as they get more comfortable living in this city playing for that franchise.
And that's the big question mark for Houston, isn't it? Is the change in DC. Now, I believe that is the right decision to make. I have a great deal of respect for Romeo Crennel, clearly an incredibly smart guy, very good DC. But at the end of the day, I couldn't help but feel that some of his decisions last season in particular really hampered the Texans. His persistent soft coverage really hurt them at times against, for example, the Saints even early on, really bothered me at times. So I'm looking forward to seeing what Anthony Weaver can bring, a fresh new mind. I mean, what sort of changes do you possibly see coming with Weaver taking over?
Yeah, I think the press coverage thing and, the soft coverage, I mean, I obviously a lot of Texans fans have been furious over the last few years, but Anthony Weaver is a highly respected guy, and I'm excited to kind of see what he brings. But here's the other issue I've had with the Texans, and it's not, to blame Anthony Weaver, and obviously Tim Kelly is now going to call the plays, and he's the OC. These are all Bill O'Brien people.
Yep.
Like, no one is an outside voice, can bring an outside perspective to that organization. It's all within the Bill O'Brien tree. And that's not to say that Bill O'Brien doesn't hire good coaches. Mike Vrabel is probably a better coach than he is. And, he comes from the Bill O'Brien tree. He doesn't come from the Bill Belichick tree. He never coached for Belichick. A lot of people, don't like to acknowledge that, but it's true. But I think the Texans are at a spot right now where fresh ideas and just different perspectives from other coaches that have been around other people besides Bill O'Brien would be helpful for this organization. And, when you bring in, Anthony Weaver and promote him, and you promote Tim Kelly, I don't think anyone really trusts Bill O'Brien to not meddle and stay out of it, especially with Tim Kelly being the OC. I mean, Tim Kelly goes back to Bill O'Brien's days at Penn State. You really think Bill O'Brien's not going to intervene whenever he feels like it?
Absolutely.
So I thought it would have been smart for the Texans to hire some outside coaches, coaches from outside the organization. And the example I could use is, what LSU did, bringing in Joe Brady from the Saints over to, Coach O and LSU, and look what he did with Joe Burrow. Like, there's something to be said for coaches being willing to go outside their comfort zone and hire different guys that they're not familiar with. I think that's a sign of a smart coach. I think Coach O deserves a ton of credit for going outside the box and, changing his entire offense to an NFL style, spread style offense that LSU has never done. and it worked. And Joe Burrow, look what he's done. And there's other examples of that. If you look at just the NFL level of a coach going outside the box with an OC hire and then making a huge difference. And, you know, it seems like the Texans just kind of went with the same old, and, you know, I don't think anyone's going to be surprised if we're having the same issues with the offense next year as we have the past few years, with the criticisms of, well, they have this talent, but, you know, the play calling's holding the quarterback back, and, you know, the play calling doesn't do a good job utilizing the talent they do have on the outside, and where are the tight ends in this offense? So I just think, you know, it's kind of like repeating the same thing over and over again and trying to expect a different result. I don't know if that different result's coming just because you changed the two coordinators, when the two coordinators are, you know, clearly, you know, buying into the same philosophy that the head coach has, because the head coach is the only head coach they've known in their coaching careers.
Absolutely. I think you're completely spot on there. The Texans did need to look outside, but I think with O'Brien in charge, that just simply isn't going to happen, unfortunately. That there's something about O'Brien and only trusting those within his inner circle. It's remarkable. It is very much like Belichick, but possibly to an extreme. He's so desperate to succeed with that Patriots 2.0 system that he believes he has everyone in the building right now, and that just clearly isn't the case. But what I think is going to be interesting from the Texans' point of view is how they changed this offense around this year. Obviously, under Tim Kelly, how much of a difference is he going to make? We don't really know yet. But the fact they're going to have a completely different running back room for the most part, the receiving room is going to look very different. Even the tight end group is going to be slightly different with Kahale Ware coming in. I mean, how much of a difference do you think someone like him could make? Because he's incredibly athletic.
He is, and he is just a freak when you look at him up close. I mean, listen, they clearly liked him because they invested a high pick in the guy, and we never got to see him play. I mean, there's the great unknown. I'm pretty sure he was a water polo player. I remember finding that very interesting. I mean, right now you look at the depth chart at tight end, and he's, what, the fourth guy on that depth chart? But he's got talent. They like him, but, like, he had a lost rookie year. We never saw him. He didn't play at all. So he's young. I mean, he's someone that they like. They use a third-round pick on him. I'm interested to see what he can bring, but that's the problem. You can't, you don't know. There's a lot of uncertainties with this offense, and you traded away the biggest, you know, exclamation point you had in DeAndre Hopkins. I can't get over the fact that because he maybe wanted more money, even though he has 3 years left on a deal, the answer is, oh, let's just get him out of town and bring in David Johnson for him. It just doesn't make any sense.
And let's finally move on to that properly, address the elephant in the room, as it were. I've got the full quote here from O'Brien, so let's have a look. I would say the deal with Arizona was a deal that we felt was in the best interest of our team. DeAndre Hopkins was a great football player for us here. He made so many plays for us. We love DeAndre Hopkins, but he had 3 years left on his deal, and he wanted a raise. We weren't going to be able to go in that direction. We felt we had a great offer from Arizona that involved picks. It involved an excellent three-down running back who's hungry and humble and can't wait to get started. David Johnson is going to be a great addition to our football team. There's a lot of things that go into trades. How much are you going to keep on contractually? What type of players are you bringing in? What type of player are you losing? And what is the best interest of the team? Capital T, capital E, capital A, capital M. Every decision we make, as long as I'm the football coach here, will always be in the best interest of the team. Now, I've got to ask, is that the biggest load of rubbish you've ever heard?
Yeah, I mean that's basically DeAndre Hopkins wanted more money. I think he's a diva. We didn't get along. I'm moving on from him. That's what it is. You allowed ego, if you're Bill O'Brien, to affect, you know, the bottom line of what you're paid to do, which is win football games as the head coach and also now, of course, you know, the GM of the team. You cannot tell me David Johnson is going to help you. I mean, nothing David Johnson has done over the last few years will give you any indication that this guy's going to be able to go out there and help you win. I mean, you look at his rushing totals. They've declined each of the last 3 years. Last year, he was basically, you know, a backup because he lost his starting job. I mean, you know, can he help you as a third down back, as a receiver? Sure. I think he could be productive doing that, but he's paid a ton of money to do that. And you gave away DeAndre Hopkins for that. It just doesn't make any sense. You know, you look at some of the guys that were available in free agency. You're one of the running backs so bad, you could have still had DeAndre Hopkins and signed Todd Gurley for $1 million and $5 million. So, I mean, you could have done something like that, or, you know, brought in Melvin Gordon, or just done something other than trade away your best player over ego. And that's what this is. You know, Hopkins and Bill O'Brien, there were a lot of rumblings. They didn't get along. Well, part of being a head coach and being the GM is being able to manage different relationships with guys. If you have a conflict with someone on your team, your job as the head coach is to make it work, not just ship the guy out of town because you can. You got to make it work. Part of being a head coach is delegating and you know, making it work with different personalities. Not everyone has to like you if you're the coach or GM, but they got to respect you and play hard. And nothing we've seen from DeAndre Hopkins in his career would indicate that, you know, his relationship with Bill O'Brien had been affecting him on the field. It hasn't been. He's been one of the most reliable players in the history of the franchise, and you traded him for nothing, essentially.
And what really concerns me, I must admit, is that I've heard rumblings in the past from people down in Houston that O'Brien is very much still a college coach. Apparently a lot of the players have felt that in the past as well, that he brought a lot of that college style to training and that they didn't really appreciate it. I mean, do you think that's the biggest issue here, is that he is very much in the mindset of, right, this is my team, you will do as you are told, you will go by my ways, or there's the door, and it's as simple as that. Do you think that is the biggest issue we've got here, and that the McNairs are letting him do this?
I think a lot of it is due to the fact that he has all this power. He has been given all this power, and there's been no one to check and balance this whole process here. I mean, he, for whatever reason, has been able to, you know, win a power struggle with Rick Smith, you know, get Brian Gain, his handpicked GM, fired a year and a half into a five-year deal. So he's been given all this power. No one's been able to stop him. So I'm sure that then there's ego that gets involved. Like, oh, I'm Bill O'Brien. I can do whatever I want. Look what I've been able to accomplish. So, you know, I don't know how exactly he's running his team behind closed doors, but everything you hear is that it's his way or the highway, and his actions would indicate just that.
And it's extremely worrying from my point of view that, as I mentioned, the McNairs don't seem to be getting involved at all, and they seem to back him on every single play. I mean, obviously, Cal McNair came out and supported him on the Hopkins trade, and that is something that just completely baffles me, and I think anyone else with a brain out there. And that's what really concerns me at this point in time, is that you mentioned there are no checks and balances at all. How long do you think he can get away with this? How long until the McNairs finally say, we've had enough? Because I remember when Cal McNair took over after the passing of Bob McNair, I remember John McClain saying, well, Cal's a much more sort of short leash kind of guy. It doesn't seem to come across like that so far.
Yeah, I mean, if John McClain reported that, I wonder if he can go back and go, yeah, whoever that was wrong. I mean, listen, Cal McNair's saying, oh, well, Texas fans, you should be excited that you have a coach and GM that's willing to make bold moves for the organization. Yeah, it's a bold move, all right, but it's also a dumb move to trade away DeAndre. I mean, it's remarkable that those were the comments that he made during that conference call with the season ticket holders. And it's another weak thing the Texans do. They never address the media if they don't have to, right? They do a conference call with season ticket holders over going out there and, you know, going to their fans and saying, hey, we're going to do a press conference with the media, ask us whatever and challenge us. Not, you know, a prepared, you know, press briefing with season ticket holders where all the questions are, you know, being thrown at them and they, no one's going to follow up and really press them on things. If Bill O'Brien had to actually answer a bunch of questions from the media about the Hopkins trade, it would have went a lot different. And Cal McNair never speaks to the media unless it's Texans radio, which is, you know, an employee of the team. So he never addresses the media, which I think is another big issue here. And ultimately, if you're the Houston Texans, if you're the owner, Cal McNair, basically your actions have indicated that as long as they win the division, we had a great year. I mean, there's no real expectation to win or else, because if there was, do you think Bill O'Brien would still be entering a seventh season? There's no way.
Oh, it's I have to laugh, otherwise I'll cry in this situation, because it's just so depressing going into another season knowing that there's just so many holes to fill. There's no way the draft can fill it.
If they go 4-12 or 5-11, then maybe you see some change. But Deshaun Watson is good enough to win you like 8 games no matter what. So I think, like, worst case scenario, the Texans are like 8-8. You know what I mean? Like, or 7-9. But like, because I don't think they're ever going to be, they're kind of in NFL purgatory, right? They're not bad enough to bottom out so you get major changes or you get a top draft pick if you need a quarterback. But they're not good enough right now to win a championship as currently constructed. And not because necessarily of the roster, that's part of it, but because you don't have faith in the head coach who's also the GM. It's one thing if he was just the head coach, but you had a great, you know, GM that was building this roster. The roster that was built has basically been stripped down by the GM who's also the head coach. It just, nothing adds up. I think it would take like a, you know, 5-11, 6-10 type of season for O'Brien to even be on the hot seat. Like, I think as long as they go out there next year and, you know, let's say they go 10-6 and they're either a wild card or they win the AFC South and they get the old, you know, annual, you know, ABC Saturday afternoon at 4:30 Eastern, you know, welcome to the playoff game again. That's usually good enough to keep, you know, Bill O'Brien his job the last 6 years. So I don't expect anything to just magically change.
And something I hadn't really considered until recently is that with the extra playoff games now, it's going to be that much, I wouldn't say easier to get into the playoffs, but that much more likely. That's going to make his position even safer, if anything else. Is that something do you think we should be worried about, is that it's going to be even harder to get a new regime in place?
Yeah, well, that's the thing, right? 9-7 could probably, you know, maybe in years past it doesn't get you into the playoffs. Now with that extra spot, 9-7 probably does, right? So, yeah, I mean, you know, if the Texans winning this, you know, it would be very Texans, Anthony, if they're like 9-8 and they get into the playoffs as like the seventh seed in the AFC, and Bill O'Brien's like, we made the playoffs, baby, we did it, we made the playoffs, and every Texans fan is just going to be like, great, like wonderful, like we're not going to do anything. I think. I think the Texan fan is passionate about their disdain for the head coach, but I think towards the actual organization, they're kind of like, you know, like aw shucks about it. Like what can we do? Like they're, well, I guess the word is apathetic to it. You know what I mean? Like they're just worn out by the fact that they complain for six seasons, and nothing gets done. I mean, this is a team that blew a 24-0 lead with a chance to go to the AFC Championship game at home. For the first time in franchise history, go to the title game, and they blew a 24-0 lead. And since then, what has the Texans fan had, you know, to really, you know, get excited about? DeAndre Hopkins gets traded as the major move of the offseason following blowing a 24-0 lead. So I just think the fan base right now is, you know, is rightfully just, you know, apathetic to everything right now. Just kind of like there's nothing we could do. Like nothing's changing. You know, and that's a tough place to be if you're a fan.
Absolutely. And at the end of the day, moving on into the draft now, it's an unprecedented time of year, let's be honest. This is something we've never been through in terms of the virtual draft and just everyday life the way it is at the moment, having to interview players virtually as well. It's a really strange situation. So it's going to be difficult for the coaching staff to make these decisions regardless. How comfortable are you at this point in time going into the draft knowing that O'Brien is going to be leading this, especially in today's circumstances?
I don't know how you could feel confident, but, you know, you hope Bill O'Brien has great Wi-Fi. You know, there's no technical issues, and the Texans will be ready to go, make their picks, and, you know, they knock it out of the park. We mentioned it. They got the two second rounders, and, you know, they got to hit on both of them. I mean, the only way that they could go out there and improve on what they were this past year to me, Anthony, is the draft. Like, they need to nail their first three picks in my mind, right? The 2 second rounders and the third rounder they have to nail those selections, because that is the only way they are going to get significantly better than what they were this past year. Because you look at what they've done this offseason, you cannot tell me or any fan of the Texans that they've improved after they traded away arguably the best player at his position in DeAndre Hopkins. There's just no way you could sell that to anyone.
Absolutely. And I guess the only thing we can hope is that with the bad Wi-Fi, maybe that'll put the kibosh on a couple of bad trades, I guess is the best way of looking at it. But it's a difficult situation. But I guess on a slightly more positive note, there have been some good aspects to this past week in that the Texans have had, what, three current or former players named into the All-Decade team. J.J. Watt was unanimous, Shane Leckler and Tyrann Mathieu. How do you feel about those choices? And do you think that's something that Texans fans should be proud of, if nothing else?
So Tyrann Mathieu only played 1 year, so I think it's tough to, you know, really feel a lot of attachment to the guy. But I know he was a well-liked guy in the Houston community for the 1 year he was here, so that's pretty cool. And obviously Shane Leckler, at the end of his career, was a punter here, but he's a punter, so how much attachment do they really have? You know, the real story is J.J. Watt, right? I mean, this guy is the best player in the history of the franchise. He is a first-ballot Hall of Famer. He's a three-time Defensive Player of the Year. He's one of the best to ever do it, and he's a great guy, you know, on and off the field. We know about his contributions to the Houston community. He's one of the more popular athletes on the planet, and he's not a quarterback. He's a defensive end. I think that's pretty significant when you could stand out when you don't play, you know, you don't play quarterback in the NFL. Like, we think of NFL football players, it's always like, oh, it's Tom Brady, and, you know, it's Peyton Manning and Aaron Rodgers. You know, how often are one of the most popular players, not just, you know, for football fans, but just like stars that transcend even sports? J.J. Watt's one of those guys, right? He hosted SNL, for crying out loud. So you're talking about one of the all-time great defensive players. He's the face of this Texans franchise and has been for a very long time. And I think every Texan fan should be excited that, you know, one day when it's all said and done for J.J. Watt, you know, he's going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer in Canton, Ohio, and, you know, he'll obviously get his number retired in the Ring of Honor here in Houston.
Oh, definitely. And you got to admit, at times like these, we've got to look for the positives. We've got to try and find something to smile about. And that is a fantastic, fantastic point you raise. And let's be honest, I think it's safe to say everyone down in Houston is excited to see that day when he's inducted into the Hall of Fame. It's going to be fantastic. A couple of guys that I couldn't help but feel should have at least had more consideration for the All-Decade team. For me, DeAndre Hopkins should have been in the mix. And another guy I wanted to throw out then get your opinion on, Dwayne Brown. Should he have been in contention for that spot?
Yeah, they're both guys are certainly deserving, but if you look at the guys that made it at those positions, it's tough, right? I mean,
Oh,
there's
absolutely.
Trent Williams didn't even make it on the all-decade team. He's as good as any lineman in the sport. There are just so many guys on that line, especially at the tackle spots, that you know are just so good, and it's tough to argue with any of the guys that got picked. Yeah, I mean, DeAndre Hopkins certainly has a case. I wonder if you just kind of just look at some of the other guys that were picked, it was just like, all right, well, you know, we can't put everyone on there. So the guys we took were the guys we took. I don't think anyone has, you know, a big issue with the receivers that were selected. But yeah, I mean, it's tough. You know, when you're talking about an all-decade team, there's a lot of guys that certainly can make a case they belong on the team.
Especially that receiver spot, like you mentioned. I mean, it was absolutely stacked. So it's impressive. Imagine if that team had just lined up together just once. That would have been unbelievable. But there you go. And I guess to close it off, you know, I like to throw my guests off a little bit. We've seen a lot of, well, not too many. We've seen some changes this offseason, shall we say. The LA Rams changing their logo, the Bucks changing their uniform, and now the Falcons as well, doing it slightly earlier than usual due to it being leaked on Twitter. What are your thoughts on these new designs, and should the Texans look down that route?
I actually kind of like the Texas uniforms. I like what they have. They've had basically the same uniform since their inception in 2002. I don't know. I mean, would Texans fans want new jerseys? Like, I don't know anyone that I've never heard anyone come up to me and be like, "Yeah, I hate our jerseys. They stink." Like, I like the color scheme. It's very patriotic with the bullhorn and obviously, you know, the red, white, and blue. I like uniforms. I like when they wear the all reds too. You know, as an alternate, I think those are pretty nice as well. I like the jerseys. I think the white is a really clean look with the red, white, and blue, and the, you know, the red, white, and blue bull helmet. I have no issue with the Texans uniforms. I actually think that's one thing they have that's pretty good.
For me, I say the best one has got to be the blue color rush though, with the red lettering. I love it. I'd love it if they stuck with that.
Yeah, they made that the primary uniform. I've had no issue with that either. I think those are great. They usually bust those out when they play like Thursday Night Football every year, or prime time game Monday night or something.
And I've got to ask, what do you think of the Bucks and Falcons?
You know, the Bucks kind of it like I didn't notice anything that crazy about their change. I think they're nicer. Like it's a cleaner look. There's less like colors all over the place. But you know, I wasn't looking at that uniform and going, "Wow, I can't believe it." The Falcons uniforms.
I'm not keen.
I don't really know what to think of it. I mean, the border on the numbers is like fascinating to me, how it's like multiple colors and whatnot, but and kind of like blends. I don't even know how to describe it. I'm terrible at
It
describing
looks
like
like an
the colors and
arena
stuff.
team sort of uniform for me.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to put it. It kind of looks like I'm watching an XFL team.
Absolutely. And speaking of the XFL, I mean, did you watch it this season? What was your verdict?
I enjoyed it, you know, and I think Houston had a nice time watching the Roughnecks, right? Undefeated when the league ended, so I guess they're by default, you know, the champions of the XFL. But it was great. I attended two of the home games, and you know, it was a very collegey vibe, right? People were having a good time. The weather was great for both the home games I was at. People were just drinking and, you know, cheering on the team, and it wasn't like taken too serious, but it was like a nice environment, and it was just fun for fans. Yeah, you know, to be up close watching football. I think there's a place for it. I really do. Now, is it ever going to be the NFL? No. Is it ever going to be, you know, this league that, you know, people are living and dying with? Probably not. But I do think, you know, if the virus didn't, you know, end up ruining, you know, the end of the league, I really feel that it was going to be a very successful reboot for that league, and there's a place for it, right? We're seeing a bunch of XFL guys get signed to NFL teams during this free agent period, and that's what the league's supposed to do. You know, make us familiar with some guys that maybe we watched in college that didn't get a chance to really, you know, make it work at the NFL level, and then they get that chance to put stuff on film and get signed by a team. And, you know, obviously Houston fans got to see PJ Walker really light it up in the XFL, and he landed a contract with the Panthers. So I think there's a place for the league. The quality of football I was impressed by. The rules I thought were innovative and did some really cool things that the NFL should maybe look to adopt, like the kickoff rule and just the transparency with the replay room, with the access you get. I thought it was a really good product, considering, you know, I had very little expectations for what the league would be going into the year.
I think for me, the best thing that the NFL's got to adopt has to be the beer snakes up in DC. I thought that was fantastic. But I mean, I must admit, I was very disappointed not to see PJ Walker end up with the Texans. How much fun would that have been to have had him and Deshaun Watson in the same QB room? I mean, that would have been amazing.
Yeah, that would have been great. Thank goodness, though, we still have AJ McCarron. He's back. He's ready to back up and do his thing for another year, though.
That's definitely true. I mean, there's definitely worse backups in the league. Let's put it that way. They're in a much better situation now than they were 3 or 4 years ago. Let's put it that way.
Listen, AJ McCarron was the only quarterback that in the regular season that led a scoring drive on the first drive of the game for the Texans. People forget.
That's true. I mean, the Texans are the only team in the NFL, I think, with two national championship winning QBs on the roster, if I'm not mistaken. So that's
All right.
something.
That's a good point. Look at that.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much for joining us. It's been an absolute pleasure, as per usual. Where can our listeners find you on social media?
You can check me out on Twitter at Jake Asma. That's Jake Asman.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Enjoy the next few weeks. I hope you enjoy the draft virtually, and we'll talk to you soon.
Anthony, always appreciate it, man. To you and your listeners, stay safe, and hopefully we get back to normal sooner rather than later.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, Jake. Thanks again to Jake there. And joining us now is another Texans insider, the Storm Report himself, Patrick. Thanks very much for joining us. How are you doing?
Good, yourself?
I'm absolutely great, thank you. Looking forward to this, let's just say, interesting virtual draft we've got coming up. So with that in mind, first of all, Texans obviously have got 40th, 57th, 90th, 111, 171, 240, 248, and the 250th picks this year. Which positions are for you a priority looking into that?
Well, if you had asked me a couple of weeks ago, edge rush would have been the highlight or the top of the list. You need some help on the defensive line after losing DJ Reader. You can use some cornerback help, but mostly defensive side of the ball, right? Now with the DeAndre Hopkins trade, you have to look at is wide receiver at the top of their list. I wouldn't say it's at the top right now. I would have to go edge rush has to be the top choice right now. The most needed piece to add to that team. But it wouldn't surprise me if they went wide receiver in, say, like the 40 and 57 pick.
Absolutely. And obviously, you mentioned DeAndre Hopkins then. How did obviously his move and then others such as DJ Reader leaving, re-signing Bradley Roby, and so on, how did those moves affect the priorities either positively or negatively moving into the draft?
Well, I think that the trade of DeAndre Hopkins obviously it hurt the team because now you've taken away the primary target for Deshaun Watson. And you went from needing mostly the defensive side of the ball to be for some holes to be filled. So now you have a glaring hole. I wouldn't say it's a glaring hole, but you have a big hole to fill now on the offensive side of the ball. So it's one of those things that I think that trade set them back a little bit. Do I think it crippled them? No, I think there's been a lot of, and I'm gonna, I've been getting a lot of heat for it, but I think there's been a lot of reaction of the trade and saying that it's just going to totally cripple the offense. I think if anything, it kind of opens it up a little bit more for him. DJ Reader leaving was kind of a negative until they brought in Tim Jernigan. Is he going to be as good as DJ Reader? That's yet to be seen because he's had some health issues the past couple of years. But when he's healthy, he's a pretty good piece to that defensive line that can. That can step in and take over for what DJ was doing last year and a couple of years prior.
Absolutely. I mean, I must admit, when I saw that deal had gone through, I mean, it's just over $1 million, I think, guaranteed. It's a pretty low risk, high reward deal, isn't it? Sort of looking in from the outside, at least.
Absolutely. Yeah. You look at what DJ Reader got on the market, and DJ Reader was a fifth round pick, and now he's the highest paid nose tackle in the history of the NFL. And then you bring in a guy like Tim Jernigan, who's got, he's a veteran who's played for the Eagles during their Super Bowl. So he's got the experience, right? And like I said, when he's healthy, the guy is, he's at the top of the class. So if they get the healthy Tim Jernigan out there on the field this year, with what they paid for him is a bargain, an absolute bargain compared to what some of these other guys were getting out on the open market. So I think that one, yeah, like you said, is a very low risk, very high reward type situation with Tim Jernigan.
Absolutely. So looking forward, obviously, it's been a bit different trying to figure out exactly who the Texans are speaking to at this point in time. They're less open about it as they have been in the past, obviously, with these virtual visits. So I'm going to go through a fair few of the players here who the Texans either have met with at the combine or possibly have worked out privately in the past already. And if you could just sort of give us a little bit of your insight into what you think of these players and what their chances are, if that works for you.
Yeah, go ahead.
Absolutely. So let's start with Trey Adams, offensive tackle from Washington. They met him at the combine.
So yeah, that's kind of one of those things that you look at the need of this team, right? And you see offensive tackle, and they've met with quite a few. But you think, okay, we've got Titus Howard and we've got Laremy Tunsil. Why are they meeting with offensive tackle? They also re-signed Roderick Johnson to be their swing tackle. So I think what they're looking for is they're looking for that guy that they can plug in at the right guard position. And they're looking for somebody that's got they're wanting some speed on that side. And so I think an offensive tackle that can move inside is really what they're looking for. Trey Adams, to me, is just somebody that they're just kind of doing their due diligence on. I don't see that being one of the top picks this year for sure.
And sticking with that offensive line, how about someone like Josh Jones? I know you wrote about how they'd met him virtually. What are your thoughts on him at Houston?
You know, I like the idea. If he was going to be playing offensive tackle, I'm not so sure he would be a great guard. But I think the meeting with them, that to me shows one thing, that they're doing their homework about possibly moving up into the draft, because I don't think Jones makes it out of the first round. He's one of the better offensive tackles on the board right now, and I think that somebody that desperately needs one, maybe like Jacksonville or something like that, being that they've got some, you know, multiple top picks in the top 100, that's somebody that they go after. So I don't think that Jones would be somebody that they would really have a chance for down at 40 and 57. But if he is there and they really feel comfortable moving him inside to guard, I don't think I would hate it. I just think there would be better options.
Absolutely. I think there are definitely possibly bigger holes to plug than that at this point in time. If you're looking for an out and out guard, one of the few that I've been able to see from their current list is Logan Stenberg at Kentucky. They met with him at the combine. What are your thoughts on him?
So I got kind of a late jump on watching any type of film and reading any scouting reports on somebody. He's one that's on my list. I haven't gotten to him yet. But I'm going to have to, you know, I don't have anything on him yet.
No, absolutely. I mean, let's be honest, there are so many players to go through. It's been amazing these last couple of weeks trying to keep up with it. Moving on to running back, obviously something we know how much O'Brien loves running backs, let's be perfectly honest here. And we know going into this season it's going to be David Johnson, Duke Johnson. They may well be looking for another option there. So someone along the lines of perhaps Cam Akers out of Florida. What are your thoughts on him?
I love Akers. I've been doing a ton of mock drafts, and I keep, you know, getting him around like the 111 mark. So he's somebody that I truly think could benefit from this team, and from being on this team. And I think a lot of people don't see running back as a need, but when you look at the contract situation with these guys, you've got David Johnson and Duke Johnson, who are going to be respectively in a year and 2 years out of, you know, they'll be free agents, you know, unless the Texans sign them to a long-term extension or they bring in somebody else. So I think going young in the draft for a running back with somebody like Cam Akers could be both beneficial long term and on the short term for the team. He's got a lot of speed. He's good between the tackles. He can catch the ball fairly well. So I think you know, if they can land him in the third round, or maybe even the late second if they feel comfortable going with him at 57, then that would be somebody that I would keep an eye on.
Absolutely. I must admit, I've been really impressed watching him on tape. And another back who's sort of jumped out from me, and obviously we know they like to go in-state, is Jet Anderson over at TCU. I mean, what are your thoughts on him?
So he's another one that's on my list. I haven't gotten to him yet. I've got a lot of people that have been asking about what I think about him. I haven't gotten to him yet.
I mean, there's one other guy that for me has really jumped off as a possible sort of mid-round pick, AJ Dillon out of Boston College. I don't know how much you've seen of him. I've been really impressed with him. I like his versatility. I like his speed. Is he someone you've had a chance to get to as of yet?
He is actually the next one. I was done here tonight. He's actually the next person I'm getting ready to watch. So
Absolutely.
we'll have to circle back on that one.
Absolutely. How about going to cornerback? I know this is someone that we were actually discussing yesterday. Amik Robertson, Louisiana Tech. What are your thoughts on him?
So he's a little bit undersized, and I think that could kind of turn a lot of teams off, right? You got a lot of teams that are going with some of these bigger cornerbacks, especially you look at what the Texans did last year, bringing in Lonnie Johnson. Lonnie's a big corner, right? And so you've got a lot of these teams that are kind of shying away from these smaller cornerbacks. And Amik, I like what he's got. I like what he shows on the field. One thing that kind of scares me is that he reminds me a little bit of Charles Johnson. I know a lot of people really like Charles's personality that came out on Hard Knocks a couple years ago. And for the person that he was, as far as an NFL cornerback, I don't see Amik having a ton of success, but I can't see him being, you know, depending on where he's drafted, obviously, I can't see him being a bust either. Somebody that's serviceable. I think he's got a lot of potential. He just needs to polish up on some things. And I think he can fill a need for a team that's looking for maybe that second or third cornerback on their roster.
Absolutely. And the thing for me is it really depends on where the Texans see Lonnie Johnson this year. If they see him as a starter, then someone like him might be a good fit. But it really depends on where they see him in terms of progression at this point in time. And actually, the player I meant that we'd spoken about last night was Lamar Jackson. I know he's someone I've been quite impressed with. Not great speed, but I think he's got good instincts. What are your thoughts on him?
I liked what I saw out of him. And so that's one thing. We see that the Texans are going to – we've heard a lot that the Texans are going to try to transition more from that zone coverage scheme to a little bit more man coverage. And so I was watching Lamar last night against Ohio State. And so I saw there was a good mix. In the zone scheme, he's got some good instincts. He knows his areas and his responsibilities. And he was able to sit well in coverage and make some plays on the ball. In man coverage, he kind of struggles a little bit of getting his head around. And I feel like that's something that he can work on. And he reminds me a lot of Jonathan Joseph when it comes to that. Because Jonathan Joseph kind of struggled sometimes to get his head around. But when he did, he made great plays on the ball. And so I think that's something, bringing him up to bringing him to the NFL, I think getting him involved with, you know, veterans like Roby, someone that's been in the system like Conley and Hargraves, the guys that have been playing in the NFL, that could really benefit him on getting some learning and adjusting to that style of, you know, getting your head around the ball, making a play on the ball, because he's got some good instincts. I give him that. And I know we had somebody that was chiming in saying that they just didn't see him being in the NFL corner. And that totally threw me for a loop, because watching him on film, he looked like he's got the potential. He just needs some polishing.
Absolutely. He's definitely got the size and range, and I think he's an athletic guy. I've been really impressed with what I've seen. Like you said, he needs a bit of polishing. He's not the finished product, but he's definitely got some promise there. Moving to it, obviously you mentioned wide receiver being in need. I know that's something I discussed with Jake earlier as well. There's a couple guys the Texans have spoken with. Devin Duvernay at Texas, what do you think of him?
So I haven't gotten to him yet. And a couple of the local guys that are like A&M, out of A&M and Texas, are on my list to get to. But I definitely want to look at him, because I've had a lot of people ask about him. So.
Absolutely. I've been very impressed with him, I must admit. What about someone like John Hightower at Boise State?
So a lot of these little bit smaller school wide receivers are kind of intriguing to me, because they're going to be guys, like, especially in this class, right? This is a very deep wide receiver.
Absolutely.
Class. And I think that's part of it, is that because some of these wide receivers coming out of these smaller schools weren't really getting the national attention. But when you sit back and you watch them and you're looking at them and you're like, man, that guy right there, he's got the speed. He's got good hands. He's got solid hands. He doesn't catch it with his body. I think that's somebody that they could bring in and plug in as a wide receiver too, because I think when you look at, if you're looking for a wide receiver one on this team next year, it's going to be split between Kenny Stills and Will Fuller, if Will Fuller can stay healthy. So I think that anybody that they bring in for a wide receiver, you're not instantly going to have a wide receiver one. You're going to have somebody that's more that wide receiver two role. And so I think that somebody, he could definitely fill that spot.
Absolutely. And one of the guys, I know the Texans haven't met, the thing is the Texans surprisingly haven't met with a huge amount of running backs at this point in time. So they haven't, there's not a huge amount to go off of in terms of where they're sort of targeting at this point in time. One of the guys that has jumped off the table for me, and I know he did last year for a lot of people until he was injured, Laviska Shenault over at Colorado. What are your thoughts on him?
You know, he's going to be somebody that's going to come in, and depending on the team that he goes to, is going to depend on his role. I think if he was to come into Houston again, he'll be that wide receiver too. He's got really good hands, and the one thing that I look for when a wide receiver is catching it with their body versus their hands. And again, he's another person that gets his hands out there and catches it with his hands and allows himself to protect the ball from the defender. So I really like that he does that, and I think that he can. He's got a bright future, and I would definitely not hate it if he ended up on the Texans next year.
Absolutely, and another name that's been bouncing around in particular the last couple of days after his recent surgery, Brandon Ayuk. What are your thoughts on him?
I love him. I'm absolutely in love with him, and I think if they can draft any wide receiver right now, and being realistic, like if they could grab somebody like CeeDee Lamb or any of the guys out of Alabama, I'd be over the moon. But being realistic, I think he would be the guy that I would go for, especially at 40 if he's there. I don't know if he'll slide that far even with the surgery, just because it's not, you know, with the world we're in this year with the possibility of not having OTAs and stuff like that, he's going to have a ton of time to recover, and I think he'll be ready easily by the beginning of the season. So I think a lot of teams will still take a chance on him if they have the opportunity. But, man, I was actually watching some tape on him earlier today, and just his routes are so crisp, and the way he gets defenders to bite is so fascinating, because he just creates so much separation without even having to use his body. If they can get him at 40, that could be a long-term guy that I could see having a ton of success, especially with Deshaun Watson.
Absolutely, and let's be honest, at this point in time, we need someone who's going to be around for some time. We need a long-term solution here. One of the guys that I know for me is really impressed, somewhat unexpectedly, is out of Liberty, is Antonio Gandy-Golden. I don't know if you've had a chance to look into him as of yet. He's been really impressive, 6'4", 223. I mean, he's slender but athletic enough to where it sort of doesn't affect his game too much. Great speed. I think he'd be a really good sort of mid to possibly late-round pick. I know he's been rising a little bit recently. I don't know is he a guy that you've had a chance to look at yet?
I haven't yet. I've gotten some guys that have been, you know, been adding to my list, and he's one of them. I just haven't gotten to him yet.
Especially in a class this deep at wide receiver, it's really hard to keep on top of the wall. Obviously, you mentioned defensive end and sort of edge rusher being a particular need for the Texans. Who in this class has really jumped out for you at that position?
So, and one of the names that kind of throws me, that attracts me is John Gernard out of Florida. They've met with him twice. They met up with him at the combine. And they had a workout for him, and I think that that's somebody that they can bring into this team and have a ton of success with. And of course, it's all, and who they're going to draft for this need is all going to depend on what Anthony Weaver wants to, because we have no idea what Weaver is going to throw out there for a defensive scheme, whether he's going to stay with that kind of hybrid 3-4 that Romeo Crennel was running, if he's going to run a 4-3. You know, that's going to really depend on who they want to draft at that position, because you got to have somebody that's going to fit what Weaver wants. And I think Gernard would be somebody that would do that. I think that he gets to the quarterback. He applies some pretty good pressure. And, you know, I think that would be somebody that I would keep an eye on as well.
Absolutely. And again, there's a lot of guys here to go over, and it's a work in progress. And at this point in time, like you said, and again, I discussed this earlier on briefly, it's hard to predict exactly who they're going to go for, particularly on defense, because we don't know the kind of guys that Weaver's going to be looking at. I know that he's well respected around the league. I know Rex Ryan spoke very highly of him from their time together, but it's hard to tell exactly the kind of guys he's going to be looking at. So it's kind of tricky to figure that one out. So again, makes it start our job slightly harder moving into it. So apart from the guys that we've already discussed, have you got any particular sort of sleeper picks that you are looking at as late round steals that the Texans you feel should be targeting?
You know, let me look here, because I wrote some stuff down earlier and I wanted to go over it. Let's see. So there's a guy coming out of Michigan. Boy, I can't believe I don't have his name off the top of my head, but I'm running down like 100 lists right now. So like somebody like James Lynch, if they can find him in maybe the late second round or early third round, the defensive tackle out of Baylor, he'd be a good fill. And you asked earlier about like the departure of DJ Reader, and I think that we've always heard of a running back by committee type of situation. I think the defensive line this year is going to be a committee type of thing. You've got guys like Brandon Dunn that's already in the system. You've got guys, Carlos Watkins is still here. You've got Tim Jernigan, who they brought in. You obviously get, you got J.J. Watt. But I think they're going to have to bring in one or two more guys that I that can switch in and out until they can find a cohesive unit that they really want. And I think Lynch is somebody that they should that, you know, looking at personally, I would really like. Another one even further back, another defensive tackle is butcher his name. It's Bravion Roy. I think that that whole defense out of Baylor was kind of underrated, in my opinion. I think they've got a lot of guys that can, you know, benefit a lot of teams. And I think both of those guys, both of those defensive tackles out of Baylor could really help this, this defensive line. And then let me get over here. I really do apologize. I'm trying to find.
Not a problem at all.
So,
not a problem.
Another one, if he falls, and I've seen him fall on some boards, and other boards he goes in the first round. AJ Espensa out of Iowa, man, if they could grab him at 40 for the edge, I think that would be ridiculous, and I think that would really benefit this team a lot.
Yeah, I agree. That would be a really good pick. If they can get him at 40, or if they needed to possibly move up slightly, he'd be a really good addition to that defense. I've seen him jumping up some people's boards recently, and you can see exactly why. I mean, he'd be a fantastic fit for this defense, I think.
Yeah, and I think he, if you can grab somebody like him, or even Joshua Uche out of Michigan, who, when I was watching some film on him, he reminds me a lot of Jacob Martin. Somebody that's not going to blow you away right away on tape, but if you watch what his technique and his abilities and what he's showing you that's really raw already, I think with a little bit of help, he could be a really big force to be reckoned with.
I mean, speaking of Jacob Martin, what are you expecting from him this year in terms of, are you expecting the Texans to possibly utilize him more than they did last year? Because I think, I would personally argue, they underused him last year.
I think they did, and I think they were trying to see what they were really getting with him and when he was plugged into that defense. But he showed a ton of potential. And you think of, okay, they traded away Jadeveon Clowney, and they got him, Bartavius Mingo, and a couple picks. And Jacob Martin almost matched dollar for dollar what Jadeveon Clowney did out on the field. You know, he had three sacks and a lot of, you know, a couple QB hits and a bunch of tackles. And they weren't paying him nearly what the Seahawks were paying. Well, Seahawks barely even paid Jadeveon Clowney anything. The Texans split the salary. But, you know, you get the point. Like, somebody like Jacob Martin coming in and almost matching the production that Jadeveon Clowney had, that I like that. And I think that's something that Texans fans should feel really happy about, because if, you know, give him another year in the system and another year in the league, whether this will only be his, what, third year in the NFL now, I think he's got a lot of potential and a lot of growing to do, and I'm really looking forward to training camp to see what he's going to be bringing to the team.
Absolutely, because he was extremely productive when he was on the field last year, like you said, so I'm really looking forward to seeing what we can get out of him this year. One other defensive end I wanted to bring up with you is, again, there's a bit of a Penn State link there for Bill O'Brien. We know, obviously, his former stomping ground, Yetur Gross-Matos. I mean, what do you think of him if he was possibly to slide to 40?
I think it would be a really good pick. Realistically, I don't know if he'll be there, but I don't know. And this is the thing. Like I said, we said earlier, we don't know the scheme that Weaver's going to want to run, and if he would really fit. If he does, if he's there at 40, I'd be all for taking him. And then I think that'd be one of the better steals, and it'll kind of remind me of what, you know, what they got when they drafted Justin Reed a couple years ago. You look at somebody that they drafted Justin Reed in the third round, and they come out and all of a sudden he's a star, and he's one of the better safeties in the NFL now. I think that they could definitely do that if he slides down to 40. I think he'd be one of the better defensive players in the NFL.
And quick sidetrack here. Obviously, you mentioned Justin Reed. I mean, he's been fantastic for his first 2 years with the Texans, despite injury issues last year. He played through it all. One interesting headline the last couple of weeks has been that he did speak to O'Brien about possibly bringing in his brother. How would you feel if the Texans were to bring in Eric?
I would be all for it. You look at somebody like Eric Reed, and especially with what he did last year, he went out there, was playing out of his mind. I think he probably had one of the best years of his career last year, truth be told. And he had, and when the Panthers were releasing him, it blew me away. Like, he, with the production he put out on the field, and if they had the Texans had the chance to bring him in, as, you know, at a bargain rate, I wouldn't say bargain, they'll probably end up paying him, you know, $7 or $8 million a year. I'd be totally cool with that. And the easiest way that they would do it is they would just have to release Tayshaun Gibson. And they release Tayshaun Gibson, they take a $500,000 cap hit, and they save $7 million. So you could theoretically bring in Eric Reed for the same price you're going to pay Tayshaun Gibson this year, and pair him up with his brother and just have a dynamic duo at safety.
Absolutely. I mean, don't get me wrong, I liked what I saw for the most part from Tayshaun Gibson last year, but he did have his injury issues. And let's be honest, Eric Reed is an exceptional safety. Let's be perfectly honest here. They would be fantastic together. So that would really help solidify that secondary.
Yeah, definitely.
So back to the draft. This being O'Brien's first draft as GM, obviously with the official title, throw in the fact that it's a virtual draft. We don't really know how much they're getting to see much of these players. We don't really know how smoothly it's going to run on the night. How confident are you feeling right now that they'll be able to get good value during this draft, and how confident are you in O'Brien's ability simply to draft as GM?
I'm kind of scared. I feel like even some of the best GMs are going to have a lot of misses this year, just because of their limited access to these guys, right? They can't bring them in for visits. They can't see them work out outside of what they already have. The only thing they have is tape and already the medicals that were already provided. And that, to me, is scary, because you've got somebody like O'Brien, like you said, going into his first year as GM, who's going to have to, you know, he has to have a home run draft, right? In order for the fans to cut him any slack right now, he has to have a home run draft. And if he so much as misses on one of the top three picks that he has this year, he's going to get crucified. And so I'm afraid for him. I'm afraid for the fans, because I feel like he's so handicapped this year, that unless he's, you know, been sandbagging it for the past couple of years and kind of just skating under the radar, and all of a sudden becomes this guru of a GM and can pick out these guys and find, you know, an AJ Boye or an Arian Foster really late in the draft, or an undrafted free agent, then I'm scared.
And can you see Houston possibly making some more, a couple more trades this year? I mean, obviously they brought in, say, Duke Johnson slightly later last year, and then Carlos Hyde was quite last minute as well. Can you see O'Brien possibly doing some more wheeling and dealing late on this year?
I don't think they're done yet. I think that he's the type of guy that if he can bring in a veteran, over drafting, you know, somebody, especially this year, then I think he put himself in that position to do it. And I don't blame him for it, because you've got somebody, you can bring in somebody that's already in the NFL and already has NFL game tape versus a college prospect that, you know, the draft is a gamble on every single pick, from number one all the way to the, you know, to Mr. Irrelevant. Everybody is a gamble. And I think if you the odds are a little bit more in his favor if you can go out and pick up somebody that's already on an NFL roster and that a team is looking to, you know, move because they're maybe in the last year of their contract or, you know, whatever it is, then, you know, I could see him doing it. And I don't think they're done.
No.
I have a feeling that he's got one other trick up his sleeve that he wants to try to pull out either before the draft or even on draft night.
Absolutely, I'd have to agree with you there. I think he's definitely always looking for something, and he's never done. So that's going to be really interesting to keep an eye out for, especially on draft night as well. Do they trade up or down? I mean, how smoothly is that going to go with the virtual draft? How do you see that going with him?
So I think that's one thing that the Texans have never really done on draft night is move up. I could see them maybe feeling a little more comfortable to move back if they see a player that they really like and he's kind of sliding down some, you know, sliding down the board, and maybe picking up a few more picks. Then I could see him doing that, because that's one thing that he does seem to like, is having draft picks, and maybe not so much, you know, a first or a second round, obviously, because he was willing so easily to give them away for Laremy Tunsil and bringing in Kenny Stills as well last year. I think he's looking more of that bargain bin, that value shopper type of thing, and if he can maybe pick up an extra third or an extra fourth, and move down a couple spots, then I think he'd be all for it. As far as moving up, I just can't see it. somebody that they really, really like that's sliding down and is there maybe towards the tail end of the first. And one name that kind of caught my attention that they had a meeting set up with before everything, you know, all this chaos ensued, and was Kenneth Murray out of Oklahoma. If he's sliding down and he's there at the end of the tail end of the first round, that's one person that I could see them jumping up to grab, just because I think they would want that fifth-year option to be able to have him here a little bit longer than, you know, just the standard 4 years.
Absolutely, and I think I'd definitely that would definitely spice up draft night, or first night at least, for most of us, given that there's as it stands, there's going to be very little action for the Texans going on that first day. So to close out, I like to throw off my guests just a little bit where I can. So obviously we've just had the NFL All-Decade team announced. Congrats again to J.J. Watt, Shane Leckler, and Tyrann Mathieu, obviously here for 1 year. Looking forward, it's very early on to be saying this, out of this current Texans roster, do you believe any of the players have the ability to make the following decade's team?
Ooh. That's currently on the roster now. I think Deshaun Watson's probably maybe the only person. And depending on how much longer J.J. Watt plays, maybe. Because you can look at guys like Geno Atkins, who have been playing in the league for, what, 15-plus years, that have had a stellar career. And I think Deshaun Watson's probably maybe the only one, but he's gonna have they gotta at least make the AFC Championship or even make the Super Bowl for him to even be considered.
Absolutely,
I think he's probably the only person.
I think the only other one that I might possibly throw in there to keep an eye out for would be Justin Reed. If he can get back to full health and create a strong partnership, I quite like looking at him for the next few years.
Yeah, for sure. And I think Justin would just kind of, like, you know, just depending on how things go success wise for the team, I think he would just kind of be a victim of the situation, regardless of what he individually does out there on the field. I think if the defense is kind of struggling for the next, you know, however many years, that he would just kind of be a victim of that situation where, you know, even if he goes out there and he's an all pro, that he still kind of doesn't make it.
Absolutely. Patrick, it's been an absolute pleasure speaking to you. Where can our listeners find you on social media?
So on Twitter, it's at ThePatrickStorm. Instagram is the Texans Storm Report. And then on Facebook is Houston is the Texans Storm Report also. So I appreciate everybody that's tuning in and that's listening. And then anybody that has any positive feedback, please let me know.
Absolutely. Thank you very much for joining us once again. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you to all of you for listening in. My name is Anthony Wood. Follow me on Twitter at ARWoodNFL and tune in next week when we will have a couple more special guests. Thank you very much. And of course, go Texans.